This is Central Time.
Our next guest has written a call to action for museums, libraries, and archives. He says there's a generation of digital natives who bring a huge appetite and aptitude for the digital world, and it's time for these institutions to start meeting their needs or lose relevance.
Joining us now is the Secretary of the Smithsonian Institute, Wayne Clough. He's written a new free ebook called Best of Both Worlds, Museums, Libraries, and Archives in a Digital Age. We've got a link to that on the Central Time Facebook page. Wayne, thanks so much for joining us today.
Pleasure, Rob. Veronica, glad to be with you.
Well, how is the role of museums changing in the internet age, and are they keeping up?
Well, it's a struggle for museums because they typically don't have a deep technological bench and set of resources to tackle these things. But at the same time, it's a huge opportunity area because it can increase their relevance substantially, not only in terms of enhancing the true physical visit, which I think will continue to people will continue to want, but offering educational materials to people they've never reached before and people who might not go to museums ordinarily.
Well, one interesting opportunity when I dig deep into what's going on in a museum, I always hear that whether we're talking art, science, you name it, there's a big part of their collection out there that's not on exhibit to the public. Let's start there. How can museums use the internet to start bringing the rest of that material off the bench and onto our screens?
Well, that's a good point. And at the Smithsonian, we take that particularly seriously because we have 137 million objects in our collections. And obviously, we can't put all those on display. And in some cases, they're scientific collections, and so you wouldn't have them all on display ordinarily anyway. But digitally, you can make, I think, decisions about what the public really wants and work with the public in terms of letting us know what they want. And you can digitize your collections and make them available to people. The challenge is not only coming up with high-quality digital images, particularly for three-dimensional objects in your collections, but also to provide what is technically called the metadata or the information supporting the object. Where did it come from? When was it developed? Who painted it or who developed it and so forth? That's the hard part. And we're actually finding that a lot of people who want to be digital volunteers to help us do exactly that. So we're looking to crowdsource this as much as we can.
That was one of the fascinating things, because I think you make the argument in your book that by putting some of these things online, there are people out there who might know things that even the Smithsonian doesn't and can help you out with categorizing and archiving it online.
Absolutely. And we've found that we now have a volunteer website that we're putting up. We just run a beta test on it, and we had so many people volunteer, we were just floored. And so what we do is offer people opportunities to participate with us. We have 19 museums and galleries and a series of research centers. So we're going to offer them opportunities to volunteer digitally in any of these different areas, depending on their interest.
And you mentioned your collection has over 170 million items. You only want to start by digitizing just 14 million. That still sounds pretty ambitious to me.
It is ambitious, and we're actually exploring robotics and other techniques to be able to do some of these things. Here again, volunteers can help us. Volunteers can come in on the weekends and help us with some of our digitization. We are also looking at third parties to do it because museums aren't staffed up to do this, and there are organizations that do this as a matter of course. And they return the images to you for some sort of pro bono comments or quid pro quo type of relationship for a period of time with the digital images themselves.
Are we talking 3D for all 14 million, or is that just a portion of those?
There's some that you will do 3D for. That's obviously a more sophisticated technology at this point in time. But we have really had a lot of fun with that here at the Smithsonian. And you not only can create a 3D image file for some fascinatingly iconic object, and you know we have examples of that here, like the gunboat Philadelphia, which was at the Battle of Lake Champlain, prevented the British from coming down into the United States. And this gunboat was like a kamikaze plane of its time. It had one small cannon on it. They were all sunk, but this one was brought up. And very few people see that. And we actually have digitally imaged that now, and you can see it on the internet. Put it on your iPad, turn it around. But in addition, you can send this image file to a school. And if the school has a fairly decent 3D printer, they can actually print a version of the object out right in front of the students.
Wow, that sounds fun. Now, another behind-the-scenes thing, apart from the collection that's not out for public display, you talk about the work that people at a museum like the Smithsonian are doing that you know we don't see when we're just walking through the museum. What kind of things can you put online?
Well, I think that's the fascinating part about it. When I came to the Smithsonian, I was not a museum person. I came out of the university world. And I got to meet the people in who were working in collections, the people who, at the Smithsonian, we have a huge scientific core who travel all over the world to do paleontological work, anthropological work. And I got to talk to these people, and I said, this is fascinating what you're doing. People will want to know this. And so the simple technique is to just do YouTube videos with these folks and be able to distribute it that way. But we can now take people actually on field trips with us. They can participate with us in classifying specimens that we bring back from some of our expeditions. And you can walk right into the collection center and see exactly what the conservator, the scientist, the scholar is doing in the collections. And to me, how you do this work is just as fascinating as what comes out of it.
Are you bringing classes, students from around the country, university or high school, to help crowdsource some of these things?
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously, speaking of someone who is, let's say, a little more mature, young at heart, shall we say, we know that some of the young people out there are much more adept at using technologies than we will ever be. And so we have a very large intern program here at the Smithsonian, and it's approaching 1,500 students a year. And more we're bringing in youngsters here who want to do things in the digital space, and they're helping us get our materials out to their colleagues. They know how they think. They know how they want to access things. And so we're relying very much on young people to help guide us in how we deliver this to people. Now, in addition, we have now platforms where people can actually leave their stories with us. They can interact with our scientists, interact with our conservators, and talk to them. So it's really turning the museum world inside out.
Part of the mission here, I guess, is providing more access. I've been lucky enough to be to the Smithsonian a few times. A lot of people may not be able to afford to make the trip. Is that part of what you're getting at here, trying to reach out to those people as well?
Very much so. I grew up in a rural community in South Georgia, and I didn't know the Smithsonian existed hardly until I was in my late teens and early 20s. And yet my parents, who were taxpayers, were helping pay for the Smithsonian because we are partly supported by the federal government. And I think it's an obligation of ours to make the resources of this amazing institution available to all Americans. And the digital process allows us to do that, not just in a static or passive voice of God sort of way, but in a way that allows people to interact with us and tell us their stories. We have an exhibition coming up on agricultural heritage. We have many objects in our collections about this, but we have allowed people to leave their stories of growing up on a farm in different parts of the country, and that has been a very rich source of information to inform the exhibition. So people taking part in our creative processes is what's happening today.
Now, the title of your free ebook is Best of Both Worlds. You're looking into how the actual physical museum and the digital manifestation complement each other. Talk about how they interact and relate.
Well, the visitation to museums is at an all-time high, and at the Smithsonian it is. We're over 30 million visitors a year to our museum. So people love to come to museums. It's a family experience. It's a shared experience. And there's nothing like seeing the real thing. Seeing the Star Spangled Banner, there's nothing like seeing the real Star Spangled Banner. You can't recreate that digitally. And so the physical visit, I think, will always be important. And you can actually enhance that visit by providing information before the visit. You can actually have different types of technologies that make it easier for people to understand what they're seeing when they're here, and they can continue to learn after they leave. But clearly, digitally, we can reach those people who can't afford to go to a museum, don't have the time to go to a museum, or are in communities that aren't normally reached by museums, like rural communities and some groups, minority groups that traditionally have not seen themselves reflected in the collections of museums.
Now, the Smithsonian is not alone in doing these things. A lot of other museums around the country, libraries too, are involved in this. Isn't it expensive, though? Isn't that a stumbling block for you at the big level down to the local library, local museum?
It is, and we spend a lot of time talking to our colleagues. You have a rich array of museums in Madison. It's very impressive. And I'm sure every one of them is struggling with this very same type of challenge. But we have 180 museums or so that we're called affiliates for the Smithsonian. And we spend a lot of time with them, learning from them and helping them and providing them with information as well. So we're all learning about this together. We will all, you know, the fact of the matter is, if you settle on a technology today, it'll be changed next year. And so you've got to be adaptive. It's not easy. It's not going to be cheap. You have to find a way to do it. We think that our visitors will start supporting us in this effort, just like in some cases people charge admission. We don't. But we think people will be willing to support us financially. Donors will do that. Foundations will do it. And we'll find volunteers to help us get our work done. We have 6,000 volunteers at the Smithsonian. We couldn't do what we do without them. But we might have 100,000 digital volunteers in the future who will help us get our work done more quickly than we would otherwise.
Wayne, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure.
Wayne Clough is the secretary of the Smithsonian Institute. He mentioned the Star Spangled Banner. Just heard a rumor that this Friday is the anniversary of the Star Spangled Banner. Funny that came up twice in a day.
And Rob will be singing his own rendition of that on Friday. I look forward to that.
I shan't be doing that. We'd like people to continue listening to the show.
Coming up next, we'll look at what it means to grow up today for working class young adults. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come here on Central Time.